Good morning. Archaeologists who have been digging in Egypt in the past, I don't know how long ago, but how long ago they found it, but they have found artifacts dating back, well, they date it back to about 3000 BC. So it's a number that's could be legitimate. It's not one of those hundreds of thousands of years numbers, so it's a believable number. But they found these artifacts over there that have these microscopic little carvings on them. Carvings so small that they can't see the details of these carvings without a magnifying glass or a microscope for themselves. So, in order to do these carvings, they have theorized that way back then, 3000 BC, they've had a type of magnifying system themselves, some sort of magnifying glass or some kind of crystal to be able to look through to magnify that artifact in order to do those carvings. And Nero, the emperor of Rome from 54 to 68 AD, when he was watching the games at the infamous Colosseum, he would even use some kind of magnifying system, like a stone in front of his eyes, because he had poor vision, apparently. But he would use something to magnify what he was looking at in order to see better. A magnifying glass. It's nothing too fancy, really. It's just a piece of glass that's been curved specifically. It's an outward curve. It's curved outward, kind of like a convex shape. But as one looks through it, it magnifies what you want to look through. And we're all pretty familiar with magnifying glasses. But as you look through it, the object itself that you're looking at does not actually get bigger. If I look at my Bible with this, the Bible stays the same size. The Bible isn't changing. It's not even getting closer to me. It looks like it's getting closer, but it's not actually getting closer. It's not growing. It's not getting closer. It's just the light rays. The light rays and the way it's being viewed, it's adjusting it, those images for me. The object looks like it's getting bigger. It's not. It just appears that way. The first telescope, which is basically just two magnifying glasses kind of put together, very specifically. But the first telescope was built in the 1600s. And this allowed then people to see great distances. So this, the magnifying glass lets us see things that are close to us, just make them bigger. The telescope, it lets us see things that are a long ways away, very, very far away, and see them as if they were up close to us. I've noticed that the word magnify or magnified is in the Bible quite a bit. In the Old Testament, well, the word magnified is used in the Old Testament several hundred times. It comes from a Hebrew word called gadol. It has other meanings, or it's been translated to other things. It means to make large, obviously. It also is translated as other words such as great or greater, grew, grown, exceed, brought up, promote, advance, lift up, increase. One form of this word is used in Genesis when God is making a promise to Abram. It's in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Now the Lord said to Abram, "Get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great." God promised to make Abraham into a great nation, and it's that word great that is the same word that can be used as magnify. And Abraham's family, his line, did get magnified. It did increase to the stars, and more numerous than the stars in the sky. And early in the book of Exodus, we can read of Moses' birth, and and how he was supposed to be killed, but his mother hid him and had him float down the river in a basket, and how Pharaoh's daughter found him, and then eventually had Moses' own mother raise him. But I wanted to read from Exodus chapter 2, verses 9 through 11, what it talks about Moses. And this is when Pharaoh's daughter is giving Moses back to his mother. Exodus 2, 9 through 11. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, Moses' mother, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him, and the child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So she called his name Moses, saying, "Because I drew him out of the water." Now it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown, that he went out to his brethren and looked at their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. But in verse 10, it uses the word grew, and verse 11, the word grown. And both of those words can also be translated to magnify. And then lastly, in my last example, in 1 Kings chapter 10, it's speaking about Solomon's wealth, King Solomon's great wealth. And there's another word here that can be translated to magnify. It's 1 Kings 10 and 23. So King Solomon exceeded all of the kings of the earth for riches and for wisdom. And that word was exceeded. So the word magnify, as used in the Bible, can also mean great, to grow, to exceed, and a few others similar to that. And it's been used many times throughout the Bible speaking about God, magnifying God, such as making God great, or growing God, making him larger, exceeding God above all others. Some of these examples about magnifying God. 2 Samuel 7 and 26. "So let your name be magnified forever, saying, 'The Lord of hosts is the God over Israel,' and let the house of your servant David be established before you." And then in Psalms 40 and 16. "Let all those who seek you rejoice and be glad in you. Let such as love your salvation say continually, 'The Lord be magnified.'" In Psalms 34 and 3, "Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name forever." As I mentioned with the magnifying glass, it doesn't actually make things bigger. It just makes them appear bigger. We can't physically make God larger. God is God. He is the Almighty. He is the Alpha and Omega. But sometimes we can see God as being a little smaller in our lives. Sometimes he can be small in our sight. Sometimes we can make God smaller, appear smaller to us, by pushing him away from us, by pulling away from him, by creating a distance between us. Sometimes we keep that distance because we're ashamed of the sin in our lives. We think that he doesn't want to be near to us, or we're ashamed and we want to be away from him, so we go away from him. And that as you get away from anything, it makes that thing smaller. Or we can make other things in our lives appear larger. Or we can emphasize something else in our lives. And by having that thing being bigger, makes God maybe appear smaller to us by comparison. The last verse I read was Psalms 34 and 3. I wanted to go back and read the first two verses of that. Psalms 34, 1 through 3. This kind of help tells us how we can magnify the Lord. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make its boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear of it and be glad. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name forever. By our blessing the Lord, praising his name, boasting about on his soul, and being humble before God, we are magnifying God in our lives. When we bless God, we are adoring God, not something else. When we praise God, we are admiring God. We are lifting up His name above all others. Our praise enlarges God in our lives. I also wanted to read Psalm 69, verse 30. 69 and 30. I will praise the name of God with a song. I will magnify Him with thanksgiving. So by being thankful of everything He has given us, by continually thanking Him, we are magnifying Him in our lives. We are reminding ourselves of the importance of Him in our lives. We are giving Him that emphasis in our lives. I wanted to go through and pick out a few examples of people magnifying God. In Luke chapter 1, that's where I'll turn to first. In Luke chapter 1, obviously this is about the birth of Jesus. But he's not born yet. Shortly after being visited by the angel of the Lord who told Mary that she was carrying God, that Jesus was alive in her, literally, Mary went to her cousin Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist. So I wanted to read from Luke chapter 1, 46 and 47. And Mary said, "My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit has rejoiced in God my Savior." My soul magnifies the Lord. Mary was so excited and so happy that she had to tell someone. She had to go tell someone what the angel had told her. She told Elizabeth that her soul magnifies the Lord, that her soul was making God great, that God was growing inside of her, literally growing inside of her, becoming larger inside of her. Then that next verse, "My spirit has rejoiced in God my Savior." She was thrilled to have this honor to be the mother of God's Son. Even with everything else that she was going through at that time, I'm sure it was not easy for this young girl to be pregnant, unmarried, but still, she was rejoicing. She was happy about it. She was magnifying God. So no matter what is going on in our lives, we shouldn't let that get in the way of remembering that God is in our lives. God is in us, and He can grow in us too, not exactly the same way that He did with Mary, but we can have God grow in our lives. We can magnify Him in our lives. I also thought about the story of David and Goliath. In 1 Samuel, David is a young man, young boy. We're not told exactly how old he is, but probably somewhere in his teenage years would be a safe bet. But he wasn't old enough to go to war, so that might be significant as determining his age. He wasn't old enough to go to war. So he was fairly young, but he also magnified God. So I'd like to read from 1 Samuel chapter 17. It's a story we're all familiar with, of course. I just wanted to refresh our minds this morning. 1 Samuel 17, I'll start with verse 40. This is after he's tried on Saul's armor, decided that wasn't going to work. This is after he's picked up the 5 stones, so he's going out to face Goliath. Then he took his staff in his hand. Okay, here's where he chose the stones. Took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook, and put them in a shepherd's bag, in a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand. And he drew near to the Philistine. So the Philistine came and began drawing near to David. And the man who bore the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good-looking. So the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, and that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." When David went out to the battlefield, the Israelite army was afraid, because they saw Goliath as huge. They had magnified Goliath in their sight. David saw God as being magnified. He saw God as being larger than Goliath. Goliath was huge, but God was bigger. God was magnified. To turn a couple books up to 2 Kings, my next example. In 2 Kings, the king of Syria, which is a neighboring country to Israel, just to the north, but this king of Syria, he learned that the prophet Isaiah was providing the king of Israel with information about an attack that Syria was planning. So Syria from the north was planning on attacking Israel, but Elisha was telling Israel, the king of Israel, what was going to happen. But, of course, he wasn't supposed to know this because he's not with Syria. So the king is like, okay, how are they finding this stuff out? So he's starting to blame some of the people in his own camp. But finally he learns that basically he's just wanting to get rid of Elisha. And so I'm going to start reading in 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 11. I'm going to kind of be jumping around to get the main aspects of the story that I want. 2 Kings 11 and 12. 2 Kings 6, 11 and 12. "Therefore the heart of the king of Syria was greatly troubled by this thing," them knowing what they're going to do. "And he called his servants and said to them, 'Will you not show me which of us is for the king of Israel?'" So again, he thinks he has a traitor in his own camp. "And one of his servants said, 'None, my lord, O king, but Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom.'" So again, the king is thinking there's a traitor, but his servants are saying, "No, it's just Elisha. He knows this stuff." So the king of Syria then sent an army to Dothan, a city where Elisha was. He found out where Elisha was staying. So he sends his army there to capture Elisha and most likely kill him. So now I'll move up to verse 14. "Therefore he sent horses and chariots and a great army there, and they came by night and surrounded the city. And when the servant of the man of God arose early and went out, there was an army surrounding the city with horses and chariots. And his servant said to him, 'Alas, my master, what shall we do?' Elisha's servant went outside and he saw this army, not just surrounding their house, surrounding the city. A huge army magnified this. He magnified this army in his sight. This army was huge. This great army had come for them, but Elisha was not worried because he magnified God. Let's pick up at verse 16. This is Elisha. So he answered, 'Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them.' And Elisha prayed and said, 'Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see.' Then the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. So when the Syrians came down to him, Elisha prayed to the Lord and said, 'Strike these people, I pray, with blindness.' And he struck them with blindness, according to the word of Elisha." Elisha saw God as being larger than this Syrian army. He had magnified God in his sight so that no matter how big that army was out there, he knew that God was more powerful. He knew he was protected by God. And because God was magnified in Elisha's eyes, God then became magnified in his servant's eyes as well. It fed over through Elisha's influence over his servant. So when the scary things of this world surround us, we can magnify God, and he, obviously he might not help us exactly as he helped Elisha here, but he will help us. He will influence our lives. In the book of Numbers, that's what I'll be reading from next. In the book of Numbers, the Israelites were not yet in the Promised Land, but they were close. They were right on the bank of the Jordan, about to go into the Promised Land. But before they went over, before they went into it, they wanted to see what the land was like. They wanted to kind of have a preview of what they were getting into. So they sent 12 spies over to the Promised Land to get a report, to get an idea of what was over there. And in Numbers 13, we can read what the spies reported back. Numbers 13, I'm going to start with verse 27 and actually go through the beginning of chapter 14. Then they told him and said, "We went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit." They had huge fruit with them. "Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan." Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants. The descendants of Anak came from giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." And so all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, "If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness." 10 of the spies saw the enemies, the people of the Promised Land, as being larger than God, as being more magnified than God. But Joshua and Caleb saw God bigger than the army, than the enemy that was over there. With God on their side, those men that were in the Promised Land, they were the grasshoppers. They were the ones ready to be squashed under God's foot, not them. So what was the difference between Joshua and Caleb and the other spies? It was their view of God. God was bigger to them than the giants. God was magnified in their eyes. I'm not saying that the other spies didn't love God or want to serve God, just that Joshua and Caleb magnified God a little more. And I'd like to read from Numbers 14:24. Still speaking of this same topic. "But my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit in him and has followed me fully, I will bring him to the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it." This different spirit is the one that sees the greatness of God and the smallness of man. This different spirit is the whose eyes and mind magnify the Lord. When there are giants threatening us, when the enemy is surrounding us, when the worries of our lives seem too large, how do we see God? Do we see God larger than all those things? Do we see God as larger than what is against us? or are we so intimidated by what's facing us that we feel that God isn't even big enough to help? Because sometimes when you use this magnifying glass, when you're reading a word, it just doesn't read, it just doesn't magnify the word that you want it to magnify. It magnifies everything around it. It magnifies the other words that are around it too. So you still have to focus on what you're wanting to read, even though it's magnifying everything. So we have to be careful in our lives that even though we're trying to magnify God, we could magnify something else as well. We still need to focus on what we're magnifying. 1 John 4:4. You are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because he who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. He who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. But this doesn't mean that if we magnify God, we won't have any trouble in our lives. If bad things are happening to us, if we have sinned, that we think that God is small, that we don't have enough God in our lives, that we have pushed God away just because something bad has happened. That's not necessarily the case. Those people I've read about, they magnified God and they still had bad things happen to them. That's how they were able to show that they magnified God. If we are going through these things, it's probably because God is close to us. That he is large in our lives, and that Satan is tempting us, wanting to draw us away, wanting us to focus on him then, like the other words. He's trying to sneak in to our field of vision and us focus on him instead of God. And the larger God is in our lives, the harder Satan is going to fight to get us. Because even when God is close to us, even when we have him near to us, we can still slip away. Peter was one of Jesus' closest disciples. He was one of the three that Jesus mentions as ones that he's loved. But even Peter had times when he magnified Jesus more than other times, and Jesus was right there with him. In the 14th chapter of Matthew, Jesus has gone off by himself for a short time, and the disciples have gone onto a boat on the Sea of Galilee. And during the night, while the disciples were alone, there was some wind, and their boat was kind of being tossed about a little bit. And during this, the disciples, they see something out on the water that they first think was a ghost, but it's not. So I'd like to read from Matthew chapter 14. Matthew 14, verses 25 through 33. Now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I. Do not be afraid." And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." So he said, "Come." And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him, and said to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. Then those who were in the boat came and worshipped him, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." For a short time, Peter magnified Jesus. Magnified him so much, he was able to walk on water. But that's when the waves came. That's when the waves began to look bigger to him and draw his attention away from focusing on Jesus. And Jesus, the waves began to look just a little bit bigger than Jesus, and that's when he began to sink. Even though Jesus was right with him, very near to him, that he could almost touch him probably, the waves looked bigger. When we magnify Jesus, that's when we're going to face the troubles. That's when Satan is going to try to get us. And that's when, most importantly, we need to then magnify Jesus and God more in our lives. But we are going to face these trials. James 1, verses 2 and 3. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. And then another commonly known one, 1 Peter 1, 6 and 7. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you shall be grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it be tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And Peter is a great example for this, because not only this time did he fall, but other times before Jesus' crucifixion, certain trials, temptations in his life were magnified in his sight more than God or Jesus. But Peter was always able to reverse that again and magnify God and Jesus in his life again. But as Christians, we are going to go through trials. We are going to be tempted. Magnifying God is not going to take those away, but it's going to make them, it's possibly make them happen more often. But we have to keep magnifying God, making God bigger in our lives than anything else. In the early 1800s, there was an admiral in the British Navy, and his name was Horatio Nelson. Nelson had a more aggressive style of battle than some of the others. In previous battles, he had been blinded in one eye. That just goes to show how aggressive he was, but he still fought on, still aggressive. But in 1801, there was a big battle. All the British fleet was attacking the combined navies of Denmark and Norway. Three of the British ships had already been run aground. They'd already been taken out of the battle. So the admiral in overall command of the British Navy was commanding retreat. Get away, get out. We're done. Save yourselves. Naval orders at this time were transmitted through signal flags, because obviously they didn't have walkie-talkies or radio back then in the 1800s, so they used flags to communicate different commands. And in order to see the flags and to see them up close and well, they used telescopes to magnify their commands. So Nelson, again, the more aggressive commander, but not the one in charge, he could see on the other ship that an order was being given. He could see the flags, but he couldn't tell which flags or what direction they were pointing, whatever. But he had an idea what the order was going to be, to run away. He didn't want to do that. He didn't want to do that. He wasn't ready to retreat. He wasn't ready to give up the fight. So Nelson, he lifted his telescope up to his blind eye. Lifted up to his blind eye and said to his captain, "I don't see the signal." And he ordered his forces to continue to attack. And this is where the term turn a blind eye comes from. Nelson knew that his orders were going to be. He didn't want to follow them. So by pretending to see the order, but not really seeing the order, he thought that would give him an excuse for disobedience, because he turned a blind eye. Sometimes we are all like Nelson, with one good eye and one blind eye, and we know what we should be doing in our lives. We know what God wants us to do, but we don't really want to do it just now. So we hold the telescope up to our blind eye, and I didn't see it. I didn't hear what he said. But we know what he wants. As a result, we are willfully ignoring God's instructions. When we do this, we are making the thing that we want to do bigger than God. We are magnifying the pleasures of this world rather than magnifying God. I'm hesitant to finish the story of Admiral Nelson, because what happened in the story is opposite of what I would have liked to have happened. But for Admiral Nelson, things worked out pretty well for him, actually. Because he didn't retreat, the British Navy ended up winning the battle, and the more cautious Admiral Parker, the one who told him to retreat, was actually demoted, and Nelson was then appointed Commander-in-Chief over the entire Navy. So by disobeying the orders, it worked out well for him. Doesn't work out that well for us, because in Nelson's case, disobeying his order, his superior's order, worked out because he ended up making the right choice in the battle, while his superior had the wrong choice. This will never be the case for us. God will never make the wrong choice. So there is no chance of us being right where he was wrong. So we should always follow his command. He's never going to give us bad advice. He's never going to give us advice that we should ignore and disregard like this Admiral Nelson did. He's always going to give us commands that we should follow. So we should always magnify his commands. When Jesus' life was nearing its end, on the night before he was crucified, there was a part of him, the human part of him, that wanted to do things a different way, that wanted a different way of doing things in order to save us. In Matthew 26, 38 and 39, when he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, praying to his Father, then he said to them, speaking to his apostles first, then he said to them, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch with me." He went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, "O my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." Jesus was God, but Jesus was also human. And the human part of him did not want to die, did not want to feel the pain that he knew he was going to feel. But when he thought about us, when he thought about how we would spiritually die without his sacrifice, we became magnified to Jesus. Jesus magnified us in his sight. Jesus magnified us over his own life, over his pain, so that we would live. The chance of us living in heaven with him was more important to Jesus than his own life. If Jesus was willing to magnify our lives over his own, are we willing to do the same for him? If God looks small to you, you need to magnify him in your life. If you've pushed him away and keeping him at a distance so that he is smaller, so we can't see him as well, so we can't hear his word or see his instructions, we need to bring him closer. We need to magnify him in our lives. If there are trials and temptations in our lives, we need to magnify God. It'll help. He won't make those go away, but he can make them easier to manage. Magnifying God comes from praising God, thanking God, blessing God, keeping him the largest, most important thing in our lives. Again, I said thanking God is a way of magnifying him, because we are reminded of what he's given us. He has given us his Son, as we were reminded. That was our focus for that time. That was what was magnified at that time. The most important thing is the gift of his Son. So when we feel ourselves drifting away, if we feel that he is getting smaller, we need to reach out to him like Peter did. Reach out to him like he was when Peter was falling, when Peter was drowning. Reach out to him. Reach out for help. We need to reach out to him and draw him near to us magnify him again in our lives, and bring him to us. If you need to draw yourself near to him this morning for whatever reason, you're invited to come forward as we stand and sing.